Session number 10420, rule 24.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 24. You said that you found B Company in poor straits. In what ways did this show itself?
Well, I think they were generally untidy and sloppy, and they wanted gingering up. And as most of the warriors in the company were men I knew, having raised the company before the war, I'm glad to say they did improve. They were, as I think I've already mentioned, nicknamed the Teasdale Irregulars, B Company, and I enjoyed going back to them once more. And I commanded the company right up to the Gazala line when I became second in command in May 1942. And very shortly afterwards, CO. However, I went back to B Company. We had a very pleasant mess. I had one platoon commander was Claude Boystones, another one was Tim Chamberlain, and another one was Rome, and another one was called Wigan. And they were a very good team. Rome had been in the Black Watchers, had risen from the ranks. Claude Boystones was from Newcastle. He just left Oxford University. And Wigan was a cockney. And we had a very good, eventually had an extremely good team. As I say, our role in Cyprus at that time was anti-parachute landings, and so one went round the countryside to get to know it, and know all our particular area. And I used to wander around, and at this time of the year, birds were migrating, and I can remember seeing flocks of cranes or storks moving south, some 150, I remember on one occasion I counted, and I used to look at the streams, because every pool or well or stream had to have fish in it as an anti-precautions against malaria, and even in a pool which the farmers would use to dip their sheep in. And when they dipped the sheep in there, they rarely did dip them. They themselves went in and scrubbed them. But there'd be little fish in there to keep down the mosquitoes. And in the streams, you saw innumerable terrapins, tortoises. And I used to wander around looking for birds and looking for at the nature, Cypriot nature. We used to also cooperate with some of the Cypriot commandos from the Cypriot Defence Force. Now, no Cypriot could use an open knife. They weren't allowed to have open pen knives at all because they were so murderous, I suppose, or they could flare up. In a bad temper. But the commandos were, in fact, the only Cypriots allowed to use a knife. And we used to cooperate with them in certain exercises while we were there. Well, at the end of October, we were told we were going to moved to Haifa and in Palestine, and an Indian division was going to take our place. And on the third, we packed up, said goodbye to all the shipwrecks we knew. And as I say, the last evening there, I passed this shipwreck house where a wedding was taking place and where it would last for at least 3 days. I moved to there. I walked past that after having been to a conference by the CO, given by the CO, to make arrangements for our departure. And on the 3rd of November, we went to caught the train at the station at Kikini to Messia. Now, there is no railway now, but this was a narrow gauge railway that went right across the island. The engines either were sort of Ford motor engines pulling the train, or they were steam. And it was always said that the trains burnt wood in their engines and threw coal at the animals that were on the railway line. But it's now no more. And it really was a veritable Emmett line to a little twittering. And we went in trucks. There was a carriage, I think. They generally had a train of one carriage and the rest were trucks. And I think we were in trucks. And we went in two trains. I remember the train was filled up with its water tanks were filled up by bucket. There was no arrangements to fill the tanks by any means other than bucket. And the women folk did most of the work on the railway line. The station master still wore national dress. And we puffed away to Farm Augusta. We passed, I think, a train of Highland Light Infantry. I think it was there, a truckload of Highland Light Infantry that were going to take our place. And there was a piper on the top of the truck that piped us into Farm Augusta. We didn't go to any transit camp. We went straight to the harbour, and again, it was dark, and we embarked at 4 a.m. on HMS Nizam and Napier and Jackal. The Nizam was an Australian destroyer, and the captain was not very helpful in letting us get our kit on board. However, the junior officers were just the opposite, and they smuggled all our kit on board the Nizam, and we then set sail. I know I had in the captain's cabin, or chief officer, captain's cabin, I think it was, I know I had a drink party, and I know I drank four glasses of sherry, I remember, one after the other, and the CO, Sammy Battiscombe, came in and looked in after I'd had a meal and had a good glass of port with the captain. Anyhow, we set sail for Haifa, and where we again had to disembark quickly so that the three destroyers could be out in the Mediterranean as quickly as possible, as if nothing had happened. There were other destroyers in the harbour at the time, and we unloaded, got into transport and buses, and were taken up to Acca, which is north of Haifa, and then we went on to the village of Azib, and then a little bit further, not far from the village of I can't remember now, but another little village at the base of Ras Nakora. Ras in Arabic is a headland, and on the top of the Ras Nakora, the top of the headland, was the frontier post between Palestine and Lebanon. And we were on the camp was on a slight hill, and it had a very good view of looking over Palestine. To the south, we could see away in the distance Mount Carmel beyond Haifa, and then on the other side, we could look to the Lebanese border and eastwards, right across the plain towards Jezreel. And behind us, a mile or less, was the sea. And we were there preparing to make this tremendous journey. But really, we really didn't know, even now, where we were going to. It was all hush-hush, very secret. All we knew and did was to go for certain route marches, but we brought no guns with us, Ben guns with us from Cyprus. We left all that there, and we had to collect a lot of, you might call, second-hand vehicles and second-hand Ben guns. And these all had to be tested before we set out on this long journey. Sammy Batiscan, the CEO, was always interested in birds too, rather like me. And we used to walk down to the sea for a bay through the fruit groves, olive groves and the fruit trees. And we always used to study the birds that we could see. We found noticed all sorts of varieties, green finches, goldfinches, warblers, and bulbuls, and blue throats, and that sort of thing. One thing was really rather interesting. While we were there, a Jew started to come round every morning, and he would bring butter, thing unheard of, cream, eggs and vegetables every day, and milk. And every day he came round with this. Of course, the Arabs would never think of doing that, but this Jew came round, and in our mess we all had cream and fresh cream, fresh butter, and eggs and fresh vegetables, which he bought just like a vegetable merchant in the town, anywhere here in England.
Was this a permanent camp?
No, it wasn't a permanent camp. There were one or two huts, but all the tents, we had to put up our own tents. There were a few tents up. No, it wasn't a permanent transit camp, no. But it was a very pleasant place. We had to test the Bren guns in the Sydney Smith barracks at Acre. Of course, Acre was where, as far as Napoleon got in his attempt to get to India from Egypt. Otherwise, we just had to keep fit and test and bathe, of course, and test these second-hand weapons, which had all been used in Eritrea. Any that weren't of any use, we had to discard. Again, we were so typical new boys. I'd never heard a jackal before. And I remember the first occasion I heard a jackal. I thought it was some of my own chaps in B Company in the lines having a roaring joke. But it wasn't. It was the jackals laughing. It wasn't. It was dusk, but it wasn't night. dark. It wasn't completely dark, and these jackals had come down out of Galilee to see what they could find in the camp, and they were roaring, rushing round the camp at the bottom. We could overlook the camp from the little hill, and they were down at the bottom having great fun. That was the first time I ever heard jackals. I used to hear them very often in the future. But we were there, I suppose, I can't remember. We collected the second hair. Yes, on the 12th of November, so we were there about 10 days. We set off at 6 in the morning on this long journey. We were really bound for Tiflis in Azerbaijan, and we were going to go the whole way by road to help the Russians stop the Germans coming through the Caucasus and entering the Middle East through Persia and Iraq right down to Egypt. There were to be 9 Russian divisions and 2 Imperial divisions. And this was the great journey which we were going to make. Incidentally, we were in Palestine in the area where the Australians had defeated the Vichy French. The Vichy French were in some force in Lebanon, and they started to try and get into Palestine. You remember after the First World War, the French had the mandate in Syria and Palestine, and they were still there. And they'd had a battle, and the fighting almost the area where we were encamped. And there were mines. One had to be certain, careful that you didn't go into a French minefield or an Australian minefield. It's worth making a note of that, really.
Yes, you were saying, Colonel, about the journey that was about to begin.
Yes, we started this tremendous journey, just under 1,000 miles, on the 12th of November, and we set off at 6:30 in the morning in transport. And the route we were to take eventually was 822 miles to Kirkuk, and then just under 100 miles, I think, from Kirkuk to Eskikelik. Now, it's interesting to note, I made a note at the time, day's journey was 125 miles from Azib to Mafraq, across the plain of Jezreel, down over the Jordan, and up the other side through Transjordan. And it was all there on road. And then the second stage was 125 miles to Mafraq, to what was known as the H4 pumping station. We were, in fact, travelling along the pipeline from Iraq to Haifa. And when you came to a pumping station, you'd find there was a certain amount of civilization and water was obtainable. And on the third stage, was only 100 miles to from H4 pumping station to H3. And then stage 4 was 105 miles from H3 to landing ground 5. Halfway between H3 and Rutba Wells, the road branched from the pipeline. And H5, we did 150 miles to LG 5 to Habaniar, and by then, of course, there was no road at all. It was simply flat, sandy desert, and you could go at 60 miles an hour if you wanted to across that desert. And we moved in arrowhead formation so as to avoid the sand between the created by the vehicle in front of you. And the tarmac road then restarted at about 67 miles from Ramadi, and then we went through Baghdad on the sixth day of the journey, stage 6, which was 102 miles to Diltar, and we passed through Baghdad, and on the seventh stage we went from Diltar to Kirkuk, and then when we come to it, we went on from Kirkuk. We spent a few days at Kirkuk, and we went on to Eskikelik, which is between Erbil and Mosul, some 30 miles from the Turkish border, and similar distance from the Persian border. Perhaps it might have been less from the Persian border, but we by then had learnt that we weren't going to Tiflis. The Russians didn't want us, and we were to spend the winter until February digging positions above, on the high ground, above Eskikelik. Now, Eskikelik was a police post and a veterinary post on the banks of the Great Zab River. But let's go first and deal with the first stages of the journey. We set off on the 12th of November at 6:30. Dawn was breaking, and we followed the old pipeline through the plain of Jezreel, and Mount Gilboa was on the left, which was visible, plainly visible then, and we I remember seeing it was a really rather lovely sight, because it's all through Upper Galilee. There was a patrol of mounted policemen, and we saw riding into one of the Bouges forts. There were in those days, I don't know whether they're there now, some 63, I think, or 62 forts, which were occupied by the, specially built for the police. And they were British police, but they did have Jewish police and Palestinian police, but primarily they were a British police force. And I remember seeing these mounted policemen riding into the Bouges fort, and also a whole lot of mounted yeomanry. I can't remember what yeomanry they were, but whether they were the Somerset yeomanry or not, I can't remember. Of course, we, at the beginning of the war, a complete mounted yeomanry brigade went out to Palestine with their horses. The Northumberland Hussars, you must remember, were horsed. Scots Greys were horsed. And there was one other yeoman regiment was horsed. I remember in the first light of dawn seeing the yeomanry riding past us, all on their horses, and these police going into the Bouges fort, all mounted. Well, then we climbed up the other side into Transjordan, and the country there was so extraordinary. It was a flat desert, but enormous boulders, as big as your head or a large football, just strewn about all over the desert. Whether it was... I'm never quite sure how they came to be there, but they were on a billiard table, you might say, with large huge stones. So you had to stick to the road. You couldn't drive off the road. But eventually the road finished. And then the journey started across the desert, and we traveled in Arrowhead. But when we halted, we soon got extremely proficient at driving in to your company area. You just drove in with your buses, and tents were erected all in the particular pattern each night. And there was no question, within almost a matter of minutes, that the camp was erected, and the cooks were at work starting away to make the evening meal. And you then got cleaned up, because you were foully dirty with the sand and the dust after a 100 miles drive. And of course we stopped at these pumping stations on the road, H3, H4, and you drew your water there for your camp, and you kept to get cleaned up.
What stops did you have? What intermediate stops did you have for?
Oh, we'd stop for 10 minutes or something, 10 to most hours. Perhaps not as much as that, no. I really can't remember what stops we had in the day. We'd certainly have a stop for midday meal. But you see, we did an average just over 100 miles a day, so as to reach these pumping stations before nightfall.
And were they all army trucks you were travelling in?
We were in army trucks, yes. Trucks that had been used in Eritrea. The MT section had vetted them all before we took them over. Any that weren't any good, they'd been discarded. And and the same applies to Bren guns. If the Bren guns didn't work, they were discarded too.
And were your carriers transported?
The carriers were transported, yes. Yes, they were transported.